Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio, committed to transforming the health of the community through the team that tackles problems from every angle, doing everything it takes to bring each patient the best possible outcomes. From teaching tomorrow's healthcare leaders to translating research into new treatments, UT Health San Antonio strives to make lives better. Learn more at groundbreakingresearch.org.
The world is currently in the thick of a pandemic, and I'm not talking about the COVID pandemic. Here's World Health Organization lead scientist Jeremy Farrar.
We know that H5N1 is an influenza infection, predominantly started in poultry and ducks, and has spread effectively over the course of the last 1 or 2 years to become a global zoonotic animal pandemic.
Bird flu has, of course, hit birds the hardest, killing countless millions of wild birds all over the world. It's also been found in poultry raised for food, necessitating the killing of tens of millions of chickens and turkeys in the United States alone.
The great concern, of course, is that in doing so and infecting ducks and chickens, but now increasingly mammals, that virus now evolves and develops the ability to infect humans and then critically the ability to go from human to human transmission.
That's where we are now. Bird flu is running rampant through a wide variety of mammal populations. In the U.S., that includes alpacas, bears, seals, foxes, coyotes, raccoons, skunks, squirrels, dolphins, cats, and, most worrying for humans right now, cows.
So to me, this is a major concern.
It's a major concern for a lot of people.
The current outbreak, for want of a better word, in America amongst cows is really concerning and also talks to this issue of transmission. We have to understand in those cow settings, sheds, how H5N1 is transmitting because it may be evolving into transmitting in different ways.
And how are the cows giving it to the people who work with them? At the time of this recording, there were 3 confirmed cases in humans in the U.S., but there are certainly more.
This is a huge concern, and I think we have to watch, more than watch, we have to make sure that if H5N1 did come across to humans with human-to-human transmission, that we were in a position to immediately respond with access equitably to vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics.
Vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics ready immediately should bird flu become a human flu. But how do we do that with a virus that can change as rapidly as the flu? Let's find out. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bunny Petri. In 2023, the poultry industry poured nearly $70 billion into the nation's economy. That's chickens and turkeys, broilers raised for food, and eggs. Consumption of eggs in the United States was estimated at more than 281 per person. There were more than 9 billion broiler chickens and 218 million turkeys processed in the United States. That's a lot of poultry. That's a lot of eggs. But in May, more than 5 million chickens were slaughtered in Iowa and Minnesota because bird flu was detected in the flocks. Bird flu isn't new. The current outbreak started in February 2022, and since then, close to 100 million birds have been affected in 48 states. Those are not just commercial flocks. Backyard flocks are at risk and counted, too. And now H5N1 has reached the cattle barn and farm workers. Now, the 3 farm workers with confirmed avian influenza infections worked closely with cattle and apparently picked up the virus from them. This is concerning. Each time it happens, it gives the virus opportunities to evolve, to practice, as it were, to become something that could not only infect a human, but could easily spread from human to human. And if that happens, H5N1, like the COVID virus, is novel to humans. that means, well, we don't know what it means, but we know we'd better be ready. As WHO Chief Scientist Farrar said, we need vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics ready to go. And Luis Martinez-Sobrido is working on that. Martinez-Sobrido is a molecular biologist, an expert in virology, vaccines, and antiviral research, and a professor at Texas Biomedical Research Institute.
My experience is working with viruses, mainly with influenza. I've been working with influenza for 24 years already. And now at Texas Biomed, we have the capabilities to work with this highly pathogenic avian influenza virus that, as you can imagine, require high containing biosafety laboratories. Now we can do research with this high pathogenic avian flu.
Highly pathogenic avian influenza. You might hear that phrase shortened to HPAI or simply, as we've been calling it, bird flu. This strain of bird flu is H5N1. It's called highly pathogenic because of the impact it has on birds. It's killed wild birds around the world in large numbers, leaving a hole in the ecosystem that we will be reckoning with for a long time, but it's been highly pathogenic in other species too. At least 24,000 sea lions died last year in Peru, Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil between January and October. The coast of South America dotted with dead sea lions. Of course, sea lions are mammals.
When these avian influenza viruses start infecting mammalian species that, similar to humans, they don't have any pre-existing immunity, and they can be severely infected with the virus.
H5N1 is as novel to their immune systems as it would be to mammals of the human variety.
Now, the major concern that we have with this new one is the infection of cattle, right, of cows, because this is the first time that we see an H5N1 infecting cows. We have never seen that before. And that's a concern because we are in more close contact with cows than we are with, avian species that are migratory or things like that.
People work closely with cattle. They milk them. They slaughter them. Milk gets everywhere. Blood gets everywhere. Potentially, virus gets everywhere.
Now the virus is in cows, and the virus, like you say, is practicing in cows. And if it jumps to human, they say, oh, let's practice in this other one too. And, you know, these viruses have a very high mutation rate, and they can mutate very easily. And one of these mutations might allow the virus to replicate more efficiently or be transmitted more efficiently between cows or between humans. And like you say, they are practicing.
The results of this kind of practice was evident in the third confirmed human case of bird flu, a farm worker in Michigan. While the first two infected farm worker's symptoms were limited to the eyes, they had conjunctivitis. The third worker had more typical respiratory virus symptoms like congestion and cough. This adaptation increases the bird flu exposure risk to humans. Why? It's much more likely that you could get the flu from an infected person coughing or sneezing on you than from someone looking at you with their itchy red eyes. So while the CDC says the risk to humans from bird flu remains low, preparing those vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics takes on a layer of urgency.
Now, our laboratory is part of one of these Centers of Excellence on Influenza Research and Response.
The Centers of Excellence for Influenza Research and Response, CEIR, is a National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases funded international research network created to study influenza and combat influenza outbreaks.
We are meeting weekly with the other investigators in this CEIR team, where we are trying to answer important questions on what's going on with this H5N1 virus. Now, in our case, we are on one side working with the CDC to generate potential vaccine candidates that can be used in the case of this virus start transmitting to humans. And in terms of research in our laboratory, Our main goal right now is to see if the antivirals that we have available or the vaccines that are available will be able to protect it against this virus.
Thankfully, at least for now, we seem to be a step ahead of the H5N1 virus. Unlike with COVID, we already have vaccines, and the current bunch of flu antivirals like Tamiflu seem to work pretty well against it. But remember, the virus is constantly changing, so someone's got to keep testing the stockpiled vaccines to see if they still work, and someone's got to test the Tamiflu and the other therapeutics to see if they still work. They're going to do that in Martinez Sobrino's lab, and to do that, they need the most recent version of the virus circulating out there to test them on. But they don't have access to the virus that's out there in the world, so what do they do?
Actually, our laboratory in Texas Biomed has a collaboration with the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, with the CDC, where we are generating what we call candidate vaccine viruses, or CVVs.
What is a CVV?
We don't have access to the virus, but we have access to the sequence of the virus. So what we have done is to synthesize the virus. So we have synthesized the entire virus, and that's how we were able to generate the virus in the laboratory without having access to the virus. Similar to what we did previously with the SARS-CoV-2 at the beginning of the pandemic.
They create an exact synthetic copy of the virus on which to test vaccines and therapeutics, but it's a weaker version, so it's not a threat to humans.
So it will be a virus that will not cause disease in humans, so we will be able to safely study the virus without any biosafety concern that anybody working with the virus will be infected.
Okay, so now when you hear that folks in a lab are messing with a virus, that might raise alarm bells, even if it's only because you know a certain segment of the population will start throwing around terms like gain of function. Gain of function research is when an organism is altered in a lab in a way that might make it more transmissible or more virulent. That is not what they're doing in Martinez Sobrino's lab.
Research with this type of viruses is very highly regulated. We are not allowed to do any gain-of-function studies. All the work that we are doing is to reduce the pathogenesis of the virus or to attenuate the virus to make it less virulent. We are not able to do any research that involve gain-of-function whatsoever.
The candidate vaccine viruses are just a mirror of what already exists in nature, so scientists can test existing tools and develop new ones, like new vaccines.
We are generating vaccines against H5N1 viruses. We are developing vaccines against other avian influenza viruses, like H7N6. We are also developing vaccines against other avian influenza viruses, like H9N2.
Much more on that when Petri Dish continues.
Support for Petri Dish comes from Mama's Cafe, serving elevated comfort food, craft cocktails, and Texas beers on tap, 7 days a week. More information at mamascafesa.com.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri. So, June 5th, as I was putting the finishing touches on this show, word came out of Mexico that a man had died of bird flu. He had many other health problems, but yeah, he had bird flu. Whoa. The man was in Mexico City, had been sick for 3 weeks, and had no contact with poultry or cows. I admit, I got a little nervous. I thought, oh no, this is it. He must have gotten it from another human. It has adapted. It's go time. But, and this is a very important but, the man did not die of H5N1, but H5N2. He died of a highly pathogenic variant of a different strain of bird flu. Contact tracing has not yet revealed another person in his circle that could have given it to him, so maybe it hasn't made that human-to-human adaptation. deep breath. It's not go time yet, at least not for H5N1. What we learn about how this man got H5N2 may be the topic for another show. We just don't know what kind of threat it currently poses, if any. But it is, at the very least, a chilling reminder of how serious this situation is. Dr. Luis Martinez Sobrino at Texas Biomedical Research Institute faces the seriousness of the situation every day, watching H5N1 as it moves from wild birds to poultry and from wild mammals to those with which humans have more contact, like cows, house mice, and even house cats. Each new infection increases the risk that the virus will evolve into a direct threat to humans by becoming something that passes easily between people.
The virus already made the big jump that is going from an avian species to a mammalian species. That's a big jump. Now, the virus being able to infect other mammalian species, the changes the virus need to make are less.
And Martinez Sobrino's lab is working to be ready if it does.
We start working with the virus early in April. For us, the most important thing now is to evaluate if we have vaccines that will be effective to protect us if these viruses start infecting humans, and also antivirals. We want to be sure that the current antivirals we have for the seasonal influenza will still work against this new H5N1 virus. Based on the sequences that we have available from the virus, everything seems to indicate that this virus will be targeted by the current antivirals that we have. But we want to address that in the laboratory and be sure. So we are testing if the current antivirals we have available for seasonal flu, like oseltamivir or Tamiflu, it works against this H5N1. There are other type of antivirals that are approved by the FDA for the treatment of influenza viruses. And that's what we are testing right now.
Now, testing therapeutics may not seem like a big deal, but there are more than 333 million people in this country and only a few hundred thousand vaccines in storage to protect them.
So we will have the vaccine already in the storage room. But from the storage room to have the vaccine available for everybody is going to take time because you need to produce mass quantities of the vaccines to distribute it globally. That's when antivirals will play an important role because those antivirals will be like the first line of defense until the vaccine is available. So people will be able to take the drug before the vaccine is available so the people can be protected against the virus. Because again, even when we are prepared, it will take time to produce for everybody being able to get the vaccine. And during this time, it's going to be important to have another way to attack the virus. And I think the antivirals for that period will play a very important role.
Martinez Sobrino's team is also working to create new vaccines from the candidate vaccine viruses they created, vaccines of all kinds. You know, it's easy to forget how important it is to prepare for threats that aren't yet active threats. Then a man dies in Mexico City.
We are generating vaccines against H5N1 viruses. We are developing vaccines against other avian influenza viruses like H7N6. We are also developing vaccines against other avian influenza viruses like H9N2. And the idea is the same. If any case of humans or the viruses start to transmit in humans, the idea is that we will go and see what we have in storage that match the best match for this new virus. And then we will start producing as a vaccine. But we have already prepared the vaccine. We don't need to wait for the virus. Again, we are like a step ahead of the virus and we have the vaccine hopefully prepared. So when the virus emerges, we are ready to produce in large quantities the vaccine.
They're also developing vaccines against swine flu.
For the same purpose, I mean, it's possible. Like, you know, the 2009 pandemic H1N1 was originated from pigs, right? So it is possibility that the virus does not come only from avian species, can come from swine species. even can come for horses and dogs, because horses and dogs also get the flu. But so far, we are developing vaccines against what we think it can be a concern for humans, that are the avian and the swine viruses.
I asked what type of vaccine technology Martinez Sobrino's team was developing.
We're making the typical flu shot. We are making an inactivated vaccine. So we make a virus that is a synthetic virus, like the one that I mentioned before, but it's a virus that grows very well in eggs. So then we can produce the vaccine in eggs. And when the virus grows in eggs, we inactivate it, we kill it. And then that's what they give you as a flu shot.
Okay, that brings us to eggs. In a potential bird flu pandemic with a virus that is highly pathogenic in birds, depending on eggs is concerning. Will there be enough eggs to produce the amount of vaccine needed if the virus just rips through the chicken population? So I reached out to Texas Biomed president and CEO Dr. Larry Schlesinger about this concern, and he emailed me that, quote, promise is being shown with both cell-based and mRNA technologies as we look to diversify influenza vaccines. But while cell-based and mRNA platforms could produce more doses quickly to control an outbreak, production costs on a mass scale would be significant due to the current lack of infrastructure and manufacturing facilities. I'm not sure that made me feel any better. But Luis Martinez Obrido says there is no point in being afraid of this.
It's like when you drive a car. I mean, from home to work, you know that you can have an accident. Do you want to be scared? No, because that will not allow you to drive the car safely. But you want to be prepared in terms that, you know, an accident can happen. So you need to be aware and you need to be prepared, but not scared.
And we at Petri Dish will keep doing our part to keep you informed so you can be prepared, not scared. Thank you for your help with that, Dr. Luis Martinez Sobrido at Texas Biomedical Research Institute. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by TPR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, Jacob Rosati, and me. I wrote the show, and Jacob Rosati composed all the music and created the sound design. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petrie. Talk to you soon.